Tonight's lesson is entitled Learning from Jesus How to Give of Oneself. There's going to be an emphasis on compassion as far as sharing, taking time, resources, whatever we have to see if we can help others. When you look at life, a lot of times you find three different categories. Sometimes it's good, better, best. Sometimes it's rating things in a negative way. And when I think about giving of self, I also would put that into three general categories. One category, if you want to look at the extreme, is there are people who are stingy. Now, that degree of stinginess might vary, but I mean, if it's just something small, they may say absolutely not if they're really stingy. Or they might say, well, we'll give you a little bit, but just don't ask for too much. That's one degree. On the other end, you have the people who are, as the old expression goes, willing to give you what off their what? Shirt off the back. I mean, if you need something as far as time, if you need a tool, if you need to run by them an idea or something, they always have time for you. It seems like they're always willing to give. They're just super generous, and maybe even to the point of where their own life is messed up a little bit as far as things undone because they've been so giving. And then you sort of find in between those two, maybe where most people are, and where's the in-between? Not the super stingy, not the super giving. It's sort of, yeah, it's in the middle. And that kind of person is fairly typical. That's probably what you find as far as a majority of people in life. And it's, well, I will help you if I can. I will help you if you help me. I will help you if yes. My help goes so far. And if it's going to hit the pocketbook, then, well, we're not going to go down that road. I can help you if it's convenient. I can help you okay, on my own terms. I just can't go too far. If that's our standard, do we really stand out? No. Because the majority of the world is probably in that particular category, in that middle category, whether it's a neighbor or whether it is in the workplace, maybe it's with a child and so forth. So when we think about Jesus, and we'll see this as far as an emphatic point tonight, he was someone who really gave of himself. Ultimately, how's that demonstrated? On the cross. He said, this is my all, if you will. Okay, let's start picking up. We'll get some helpers lined up in just a minute or two as far as passages towards the bottom of the section which says he gave of his time. Those who remember in history are people who made some worthwhile contribution during a lifetime and left something worthy of consideration after they were gone. Might be the Greeks and their philosophy. It might be the Jews and their belief in the one God. Maybe the Italians with their music and art, but we do appreciate some contributions, at least we should. Aside from what he mentions, what might be some contributions that we look at? Maybe we can't trace it back to a specific culture, maybe we can't trace it back immediately to a certain individual, but contributions that people have made and we continue to appreciate today.
I think of the industrial age where a lot of people have worked in that, there have been some very influential people during that time. Some of the scientists and things they've studied.
Yeah, that shaped our nation in ways that we're still benefiting from today. So the industrial age, what else?
The Constitution and our Declaration.
All right, lawgivers. People put in good laws, which guaranteed freedom, which gives us certain rights. We talk about our constitutional rights. So yes, every single day, people from several decades ago still continue to benefit us. And we typically don't think about that unless we need them or we're relying on them, but or they're being tested, but yes, we appreciate that. Or being taken away, and then they come to our attention. What else? People who have given something, and we continue to appreciate it today, though maybe not, it's always in the foremost of our minds.
Right, brothers with airplanes.
All right, we think about transportation. Had they not done what they did, getting across the country, getting across the world would be a lot more difficult. What else? What about electricity? Yeah, you think back what Edison did, all the experiments that failed. I mean, he had a lot of failures. And he could have just thrown up his arms and said, I'm not going to continue with that. Maybe somebody else would have come along and figured out what he did. By and large, maybe not. But people have left behind, as far as a secular world, a lot of good stuff. Well, we appreciate that. If it's possible to leave some good things behind in the secular realm, do you think it's possible to leave behind some things in the spiritual realm? Yes. So when Jesus came, he didn't come with some master carpentry skills, or he didn't come with some great poetry, things like that. He came with spiritual information, and that has made its way into successive generations. A little bit more from that paragraph. He says, certainly all people will leave something behind them in their passing. Now, we've talked about items that are good, helpful, usable, items that are serviceable for many generations, but isn't the opposite also true? Can people leave behind some bad things? Yes. What might some illustrations of that be?
Money and crime.
All right. They leave behind a life of crime. And maybe they not only put a black blot, a dark spot on the family name, a few people, at least immediately, want to be associated with them. Well, yeah, they're the black sheep of the family. But also, they can affect other family members. People who are not family members. And the people that are hurt, the people who are killed because of them, those family members suffer. So that might be one illustration or example. What else?
Hitler.
All right. You think about some people who have left behind some movements. In this case, a very hateful movement. Antagonism towards the Jewish race. And that has perpetuated itself for not 100 years yet, but it'll not be too much longer before we get to the century mark with that. So yes, that kind of evil, hateful, ungodly movement and influence, that can be perpetuated. What else? Leave behind something that's bad.
Family's reputation.
Okay. That's true. People, they're known for their lying, they're known for their cheating, they're known for their stealing, known for their violence, those kinds of things. Family filled with gang members. Anything else? Leaving behind some bad items. All right, you find that it may be some kind of addiction. You know, there was a stain on the family, maybe because of what happened there as far as there was a prison sentence, or maybe they made the news. You think about, for example, the name Monica Lewinsky just popped into my head. And the reason that it did, there was an article about her within the last week, and it talked about the number of years that have passed, and she's now about 40 years old, but still, you know, when that name comes up, there is an instant association. There's an immediate connotation that's associated with the name. And I'm not sure if she lives to the age of 70, 80, 90, that's ever going to completely go away. So depending on how we go through life, depending on what we do, depending on the choices that we make, we likely will leave some things behind, and that may not necessarily be good. Anything that you want to discuss before we look at the next paragraph? Okay. Moving down there, Jesus, though, he lived for only a few years on the earth. He left behind a lot to be remembered. His life literally changed history. We divide time because of him. AD, the year of our Lord. BC, of course, the time before the Lord came into the world. It's influenced, and that's his life. It's influenced all classes of people, from the peasants to the members of Caesar's household. The message of the beautiful Savior was designed to reach every creature, to go into all the world, and that's exactly what it's done. It would necessitate that Jesus give much of himself during his ministry and finally his own body on the cross. So let's look at some of the ways in which Jesus gave of himself. The Lord gave of himself when it comes to time. Now, before we look at this, let's think about this in terms of our lives today. Most people, you think they're willing to give to some degree of their time? Oh, I think so. Somebody comes up, and at least in the Midwest, maybe in some other places they would not be so prone to do this, but what time is it? Will you take a moment to check your clock for me? I left my watch. I don't have my smartphone. My clock is broken, whatever it might be. Okay, we'll take a moment, and we're willing to do that. Would you take a moment to help me get this down off the shelf? You're in a grocery store, and maybe you're not feeling all that well. Maybe it's too high, and your height isn't as tall as you might like it to be, that kind of thing. So stopped along the road. Here comes a person, a do-gooder, if you will, and thinks, well, you know, maybe I can offer a little assistance there. Maybe the car needs jumped. So people generally, I think, are at least a little willing to give of their time. But if you go back to where we started, remember, you've got some people, when it comes to time, it's, I can give you this much, but don't ask me to go beyond that. Then there's some people who are super stingy with the time. What you get from them is very limited. And then there are some other people, they always seem to have time for you. If you call them, they might have 6 projects that they're working on, but they will still take time to speak with you. If they're in an office environment, if you see them out, and then you have some other people, you feel like, even if I say hi, I'm going to bother him or her. You ever come across anybody like that? They always seem to be too busy to say even a quick hi to you. And that's not a very welcoming kind of personality. And Jesus certainly didn't fall into that category. Let's pick up some passages here. We will just kind of highlight John chapter 3. I think we can figure out what's going on there. But we will look at Matthew 13:36. And if you turn to that passage, we'll also ask you to read Matthew 13, verse 54, just a few verses later, same chapter. John 8, Mark 4, Luke 13, verse 26. And then we'll also ask you to flip back to Luke 11, verse 37. So let's get our helpers up, and then we'll look at John 3. Matthew 13:36 in a little bit. All right, that's going to be Jeff Burt. Thank you. After that, we'll take a look at verse 54. Jeff, that'll also be yours. Then John 8, verse 1. Don, did you raise your hand? Don Harper? Okay. John 8, verse 1 for you. Mark 4, verse 1. Who wants to take care of that? Mark 4? Carol, verse 1. And then we'll look at Luke chapter 13 and Luke chapter 11. We'll start with Luke 13:26. Who wants that one? Luke 13:26. And then we'll take you back to Luke 11. All right, Lois, thank you. Let's first start with John chapter 3. Much of the Lord's time was spent in teaching. And if you're going to teach people, that's obviously going to take some time and probably some patience. Jesus took the time to teach anyone who would listen. Some of the teaching was one-on-one. And who's the fellow that we read about in John chapter 3?
Nicodemus.
He was a ruler of the Jews. His name was Nicodemus. He was a ruler, even though he was ignorant of the new birth. And today, you sometimes deal with people, maybe it's a parent-child situation, maybe it's in a work environment, and you think, if anybody should know this stuff, who should? You should, but you don't. Well, you have two choices at that point, or maybe three. What are your choices? Somebody should know something, they don't understand it. What can you do?
You can help them.
All right, you can help them. You can maybe sigh a little bit, but think, okay, they really don't know this, so I'm going to take the time, regardless of what's happened in the past, I'm going to take the time and try to make sure that now they get it. That's option number one. What might another choice be?
Do it for them.
All right, you might do it for them, which again, that's probably not going to help. Maybe that's quicker, but that's not really going to aid them. What else might you do?
Oh, they can figure it out themselves. All
right, you know, I'm busy. You should have known. Yeah, here's the book. You should have learned this long ago, and you're just going to have to figure it out. If you can't, you're done. Never come to me again. Any other options there? Okay, so and that is what we see as far as Jesus. Nicodemus, he's the ruler of the Jews. He's someone who should have had this stuff, if not figured out. It should not have been all that difficult for him. But the Lord patiently sits down with him. He really gives of himself, even though he probably could have spent this time teaching someone else. Matthew 13, verse 36. Let's see who we read about there. Okay, who's Jesus teaching here? He's giving of himself. He's taking time to teach the disciples. Most of us in this room have raised at least one child. If you can think back to the child-rearing years, child-frustrating years sometimes, there were probably at least a couple of occasions where each one of us said, if I told you this once, I told you this a thousand times. And when those words are spoken, there's usually an element of frustration there. We've taught the child this, we've taught the child that, we've discussed this over and over and over, and the child really knows what's right and what's wrong in this regard. But if we're going to try to be that kind of father that God is, what do? Maybe just kind of take that deep inhalation and with that breath think, okay, you know, I'm going to have to do this again. But that's not the way, I'll take your hand in just a second, Don. That's not the way that you find in a lot of solid Christian homes or in the world. What do you find in the world? I've told you this a thousand times, and now what? I'm not going to tell you again. You're going to get your licks now. And maybe a spanking is in order. But again, you find a lack of compassion there. Don?
Well, didn't even Jesus get exasperated with his disciples and say, how many times did I have to tell you this?
Yes. There is a point, and that's why I say you may have to do the spanking thing. There does come a point where you sort of say, okay, enough is enough. But there are some times prior to that point where you, okay, we're going to go over this again, and you might at that point say, this is the last time. You know, this is it. I mean, we've talked about this several times, and this is the final time. So if we have to go over this again, then at that point, in an employee situation, you're going to get fired. In a child situation, you're going to be grounded, spanked, or some of the punishment.
Well, Jesus was admonishing them to listen next time.
Yes.
The parent is basically saying the same thing, well, he's probably a little different tone to listen and
right.
Understand next time.
Yeah.
Maybe the child does understand next time.
Yeah. And in fairness to the disciples, there were some things like with Nicodemus that they were just headed in a different direction, and the Lord tries to keep steering them from their current thinking over to a different way of, or different line of thought. So yes, they had some additional complications, but yes, you are exactly right on that point, that there does come that time. Anybody else? All right, after filling in that blank as far as the disciples, let's go down and see what we have in verse 54, same chapter.
And when he was come into his own country, he taught them in their synagogue, insomuch that they were astonished and said, whence hath this man his wisdom and these mighty works?
Okay, so we have different people. Sometimes religious individuals like Nicodemus, they need some patience and some help. Sometimes it's the disciples. Sometimes we have the multitudes that are pressing on him. Different people. And now we couple with that thought, we also have some different places. According to what we find here in Matthew 13, verse 54, where was he teaching?
Synagogues.
Place where people went to learn. Sometimes it was secular education. Kids would go there and learn the alphabet, those kinds of things. It was also a place to impart religious instruction. If you are teaching in a religious structure, so to speak, and I don't mean that there's any holy structure, I simply mean that people have come to this building, this place, wherever that might be, and they're there to hear a sermon, they're there to hear a Bible class, or they're there for a vacation Bible school, whatever it might be, but some kind of structure, maybe even a tent outside, but they've come to some kind of religious assembly, do you think that some compassion, some patience is probably going to be needed? People are going to have to give of themselves? Yeah. If you are trying to teach young kids, the house that the child is coming from, the home the child is coming from, that may not be a very religious household. And if you're only seeing that child maybe once or twice a week, or you're seeing that child maybe once a month, or once every 3 months, the child is getting all kinds of information as far as items to process at that early age. And that 45 minutes of Bible class, maybe you've got some disruptive kids in the class, so maybe only 20 or 30 minutes of really good teaching time comes. And if you don't get any more good teaching time for 3 or 6 months, do you think that's going to be a little frustrating as a teacher? You know, you've got large gaps as far as the times to communicate with that child. So yes, teaching can be very, very frustrating. If you're in an adult class, and I think we do really well here in the adult class, so don't take this as any kind of attack or any kind of indication that I think we have a problem. But if you have been in some adult classes, or maybe you've been in a college classroom, are there some times you think where the teacher's patience is tested? Yeah, it happens. Why might that happen? All right, you might have some behavior issues. If we look at it, that's probably not going to be too typical when we think about adults, but I guess it could happen. But what would be some of the issues that you might have in that kind of circumstance? And the teacher really kind of has to say, okay, I'm just going to have to really give of myself this time. Well, what about somebody that wants to just take over the class? Now, I've not seen this, but I do know that there have been some cases and places where you have somebody in the class and he or she or they just stand up. And they just start talking. Well, you know, you're going to have to really earn your pay that day because that really puts you on the spot and some other things. What about somebody that wants to argue with you? That ever happened in a class? Why, you're wrong. Here's what Google says or whatever. They make those kinds of statements sometimes. So Jesus was willing to give of himself. Sometimes he was challenged in all kinds of places. We've got the synagogues, Matthew 13, verse 54. Let's see where else he went. John chapter 8, verse 1. All right. Based on what we have here in John 8, where else did he go? Sometimes in the synagogues, but also sometimes out in nature. He's out there, in this case, on a mountain. Do you think his teaching was any less effective on the mountain than in the synagogue? No. Could have covered the same topics. Sometimes inside, sometimes outside. So he really is pictured as someone who was willing to go wherever he was able to go, wherever people were willing to listen. And we find Mark chapter 4, verse 1, another place, and we'll take a look at Luke 13, verse 26. Mark 4, verse 1.
And he began to teach again by the sea, and such a great multitude gathered to him that he got into a boat in the sea and sat down. And the whole multitude was by the sea on the land.
Okay, now that's probably one thing that I can't ever say I've done, to go teach somebody from a boat or teach by some kind of shore. But that's perfectly possible. You're down there with people. Maybe there's a boat trip. I do know, I think this is down by Syracuse. I've not seen it. Maybe somebody else is more familiar with it. But they've had boat and worship on Sundays. You can just kind of motor in, and I don't know exactly what happens. I would imagine that somebody offers some kind of scripture reading or maybe a little sermon. Maybe there's some singing or something. But done by a denominational group, I believe. But anyway, there are people sometimes who are out there in that kind of environment, and they have tried to teach people. Another place is Luke chapter 13, verse 26. Now, I have done this. This isn't too common in the U.S. You might find it in some places like San Antonio, Texas, where you have street preachers. At least they've had that in the past. I'm guessing that out in California, you probably have some street preaching too. So maybe some of the larger communities that probably wouldn't be too safe in Chicago or Indianapolis or some of the larger cities. But there are some people who have done that, and that can be very effective. In some foreign countries, you can find that still in some places that they will go out, and either they've got some kind of crusade that's just off the main street. Maybe there are people out there on the street talking to Bible study contacts, people who have stopped to listen to the preaching, or maybe they're passing out flyers as people are moving down a public street. So I have seen that. I have been involved with some of that. And Jesus also out there talking to people on the streets. Now, that may not always be the most effective way to... anybody ever been out to Las Vegas? Okay, a few people. You don't have to get real specific here, but as you were walking down the streets, did anybody try to hand you anything as far as a flyer? Okay, I think anybody that goes to Vegas, if they spend any time there at all, they will say that has happened. Well, we probably can't put a certain percentage to that, but I would suspect when they're trying to stuff the pieces of paper into your hand, it's probably a very small percentage of people that are going to take what's on the paper and do what's on the paper. But still, they recognize that at least a few might be willing to listen. So they're sowing their seed, so to speak, as far as here are people. We have a chance to make contact with them, and we're going to give them this paper, which offers this particular service or activity. And even though most may not be willing to accept or do what is offered on the activity, whether that's gamble or whatever, we're still trying to make it available. And street preaching, street teaching, in my mind, is probably going to be one of the least effective methods in our day and time. I think Vegas illustrates that from a different perspective. But still, it is one of the ways that people can try to be reached, and something that Jesus did do, as we see from the Bible. Anything that you might add or ask on that point before we pick up with the next place? Okay, let's take a look at that. That's going to be from Luke chapter 11, verse 37. Okay, if you think about this in terms of Jesus, the Pharisee's house probably would have been a good place to go teach people, or not such a good spot?
No.
Probably not such a good spot. If you were today to try to give an illustration of that, you're going to somebody's house and it is a very unlikely prospect, what would you put in there as far as a parallel?
A minister from another.
All right, a denominational group, maybe even a cult leader, and you're going to his house to try to talk. What else might you put in there?
Atheist.
That's the one that was lingering in my mind. You go to the house of the atheist. Now, as you go over there for your first discussion, you think you're going to change his mind? I think the chance of that is virtually zero. But at least you're going over to kind of see where he is, lay some things out, and it is, if he's willing to talk, she's willing to talk, they're willing to talk, okay, we're willing to go ahead and discuss the Bible with you. And when you want to shut down the discussion, then that is your prerogative, and we will respect that. But it goes back to what Jesus said, Luke chapter 8, Mark chapter 4, Matthew chapter 13. We're trying to sow the seed. Some of that seed is going to land where? It's going to land on fertile soil. The opposite end of the stick, some of that seed is going to land on? Yeah, ditch, thorns, thistles, and some of it's going to be on pavement. And it's just like throwing grass seed on concrete. It is not going to grow. But still, you can offer to talk to people. If they're willing to listen to the case that can be made for the gospel, that can be laid out. And that's what you see Jesus. He's giving his time, even though with some of these people, he had taught them before, the disciples, even though some of them should have known better, Nicodemus, and even though some of them were probably going to be about as hard-hearted as anybody could possibly be. Jesus said, I'm still here, I'm still willing, I'm still available. All you have to do is have a receptive heart. And that is a good example for us to try to be giving of our time in a lot of ways, especially this one. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move on to the next section? Don?
Apparently he touched a lot of the hearts of the Pharisees.
Yeah.
Not just Nicodemus.
Yeah.
So they had doubts about their belief.
Yeah, he did. Because when you've got a group that large, chances are you're going to have, kind of like the Las Vegas illustration, most of the people may not be interested, but there's probably going to be at least a few takers out there, and that's what you're looking for, and that's what we're after today. All right, moving on a little bit. He also spent much of his time administering or helping with the needs of his hearers. Now, it's one thing to go out and try to get a message into the hands of people, and some are going to take that, some are not. But just the general nature of humanity, if somebody helps you, you think you're going to remember that help? Anybody remember some help that they got 20 years ago from somebody? Anything stick in your mind? Jenny? You remember. Anybody else remember help? 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago?
I remember my brother and his wife were on vacation. And they employed and I put family in one of the rooms in our home while he was here on vacation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ray was in the Navy at the time. I took him to work at the base. I was on my way home. And, well, I had stopped at Sears to get the tire changed. And on my way home, the tire flew off the truck, went into a ditch. And this man stopped, and he was all dressed up in a beautiful, expensive suit and really nice shoes. And he went down the ditch in the water and got the tire and put it back on for me so I could go back to the garage and get him to tighten it back up with the
Those are the kinds of things I was searching for when I asked for help. People might do a lot of things. I mean, they might rake your leaves or something, but I mean, help in that kind of circumstance. And if you weren't willing or interested in hearing the person before, but now you've received the kind of help that we just laid out, I think that might change your attitude just a bit. Yeah, it was kind of like, you may be of this belief, or you may be of a different race that I don't particularly care for, you may be of a social class that's different from mine. There's something that separates us for some reason. And yet you have helped me. You have aided me in such a way where now I'm willing to listen to you. And that has been one of the things that has helped a lot of people become Christians. Well, that's what you see when we start looking at this section. You have this fellow who can't walk. He's lame. And as he looks at his life, as he looks at the current medical culture of his day and time, what's he thinking? 20 years old, 30 years old, my life is over. I'm never going to walk. Now, Jesus had come along and said, hey, I've got some good news about the kingdom. You know, I'm kind of sitting in here in my depression, and I'm not all that happy because I can't walk. The Lord comes along and heals you. You think you'd remember that? I think that would get my attention. And you remember, too, I think with what we have back there in Mark chapter 16, Jesus talked about the signs confirming the word. That certainly helped a lot of people become Christians. If you're deaf, unable to hear, you receive a miracle from Jesus or the apostles so that the ears are open. You can hear once again. Now they're also ready for that spiritual information. The blind being allowed to see, the lepers receiving their healing, the thousands of others who had divers diseases. Again, John talks about this in the last section of his book, that Jesus did so many signs that, figuratively speaking, the world could not contain all the books that would need to be written to describe them all. All right, we then pick up with a couple of the passages in this section, Matthew chapter 10, looking at Matthew 10, 16, also Matthew 10, 22, and then we'll finish it out this part with Matthew 23, verse 5. Who wants to take care of Matthew 10 for us? All right, Catherine, we'll start with Matthew 10, verse 16, and keep your finger there after that's read, please. Then we'll look at Matthew 23, 5. Who wants to take care of that one for us? Matthew 23, verse 5. All right, Lois, thank you. All right, Catherine, let's go back to Matthew 10, verse 16.
Behold, I send you out a sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpent and harmless as dove.
All right, let's fill in our blank. He said that the disciples that he was trying to train would be like sheep in the midst of what?
Wolves.
And then he further added, let's pick this up from verse 22, Catherine.
22?
Uh-huh, same chapter, 10:22.
And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved.
Okay, let's fill in the blanks and think about it for a moment. And you should be what? Hated by how many people? Everybody. Well, that's not literally true, but there were going to be many. All men, why? For my name's sake, but he that endures to the end shall be saved. Two things here. Jesus, was he teaching his disciples about what they were going to face? Yes. And do you think he was helping them meet a future need? It's like today, if somebody, let's just use childbirth as far as an example. If a lady is going to give birth at, you know, a week to 9 months, somewhere within that process, you might have people who come up and say, well, here are some things that you might want to consider, some things that you can do. This is probably going to be part of the experience that you have. These are items that are pretty common. They have that need to be reassured. They have that need to know that this is kind of what you're going to face. They can't fully explain it to the person who's going to have that first child because that's a brand new experience. But at least they can go ahead and say, this is sort of what it's like. And that's what Jesus does with the apostles. I can't tell you exactly what that's going to be like to go out there and preach the gospel and to be beaten and to be hated by all these people. That's not your background. I mean, Matthew might have had a little understanding of that, being a tax collector, but for the most part, this was going to be new. But Jesus says you're going to have this need for reassurance. You're going to have this need to be encouraged. You need to be prepared. So I'm trying to teach you about this right now. So it gives some illustrations. You're going to be like sheep in the midst of wolves. You're going to be hated, but you do need to endure. It will be okay. Then a couple of other things. Matthew 23, verse 5. Lois, let's take a look at that now. Okay, this goes back to what Don was saying a little earlier in our class. Let's fill in the blanks. Jesus talked about the Pharisees. They did their works to be seen of men. He condemns them. He comes out as far as the teaching, and he tells these people, you're on the wrong road. God is not pleased with you. You people are hypocrites. And sometimes that's the form that teaching needs to take. Then that final little item in his teaching, the Lord did not overlook such lowly acts as that of the poor widow. She gave all she had because she wanted to. Mark 12, verse 43, he said that she cast in how much? More than they all had put into the treasury. Those who give all to the Lord are sure winners. So when we think about giving, there is a great aspect of that that involves time. It starts with our families, kids, spouse, should extend out to others. Certainly it needs to be something that is found in the church if a local congregation is going to do well. Any other thoughts that you have as far as giving of time? Teaching. Don? It would change some things in a lot of ways, Don. Some of it would be positive. I'm not sure it would all be positive. I think in today's world, with where we are as far as media, it might be turned in by some to more of a show. I understand. I mean, if you're raising the dead. But I think with the sensationalism, I mean, you've got Jerry Springer and, I mean, who knows how many other guys. That it would be turned into a big public performance. I can just see the YouTube videos about that. And as far as emphasis on trying to teach people, hey, this is a sign to help bring you, lead you, direct you to Christ as the Son of God. And I'm not sure in today's culture that that would lead to that particular conclusion. The world would grab onto that and take it in some different directions. But yes, it definitely would change some things. And it probably would fire some Christians up. But the world would also, and the world's always done that. The world's tried to, through Satan, take whatever God has done and manipulate it for some kind of evil. And today, with social media and stuff, I think that the devil would really be able to use that in some interesting ways. But you are right. It would alter some things in some positive and fascinating ways. Anybody else? Carol?
If miracles were done today, it would definitely get our attention, but isn't the power in the word, because that was hindered? Miracles.
Yes. They didn't have it as we have it, as that written word. And that word, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, Romans 1:16, it's God's power to salvation. And those miracles were designed to take people down that road where they would say, ABC, Jesus has come, he died, he was raised, he's the Savior, he's the only hope, he's the head of the church, this is where you need to be if you want to be among the saved. But that's not the message the world wants. The world would want to stay focused on the miracles. And one example of that, I think, when you look at that, think about Acts chapter 8. Remember who the fellow was who lacked power? Simon the sorcerer. And he sees it, and what's his first thought? Hey, here's some money. I want this power. So again, Don, that was, I mean, it was before YouTube and the internet and TV, but the thinking of man has not changed very much, and he was trying to go in that direction, and you've got him shut down. Your heart's not right with God. You're in the bond of iniquity and so forth. So today, as I said, that probably would be amplified just off the charts. But yes, the other is true too.
Christianity would not have gotten off the ground.
That's exactly right.
So
when you,
that's all I'm saying.
Yes.
I know the word is here. I know this is, but people look at the word, they don't understand the word, but they certainly would understand a quote unquote miracle from God.
Yes.
Not given to the man that's doing it, but from God.
Yeah, and that's why, going back to that point that we're just discussing, that's why a lot of those people were so enthused. If you restore their sight, give them back their legs, or undo some other issue that medical science says we just, even in our culture, can't do, then okay, I'm willing to listen to you because you've got to have some kind of power that is definitely beyond this earth.
I know it's not going to happen, but...
Right, but if we were able to go down that road, those would be some of the things that we'd see. Okay, let's talk about moving away from how Jesus gave of himself when it comes to his time. Let's think about how Jesus gave of himself in terms of his love. When we think about Jesus, love is true or evident in all aspects of his work. He loved the people who didn't reciprocate. And that is also, I think, a great point when we consider our day and time. I don't know if you saw some of this information, but there is a report right now that says Donald Trump keeps a list of people he likes and doesn't like. And if you make it on the don't like list, you're probably going to be stuck on the list for a long time. And as I think about that, there are a lot of people who operate like that. If you end up on my naughty list, you're going to stay there for a long, long time, and maybe I'm never going to reach the point where I forgive you. And certainly if you're on the bad list, I'm not going to do anything good for you. I'm not going to give you anything of my time. I'm not going to give you anything of my resources. I'm going to wish the very best for you because you are not on my love list. You're on my hate list. That's not how Jesus responded. Jesus was kind even to his enemies, his worst enemies. And that's what he taught his disciples to do as well. Matthew 5, verse 44. Remember, he said, but I say to you, love who? Love your enemies. When it comes to the people who bless you, do what? Curse them. When it comes to the people who do hate you, do what for them? Pray for them. The people may be despitefully using you. The people may be persecuting you. But you do good to them. Never, the writer says, was a greater outpouring of love manifested than when Jesus prayed for his enemies. Father, do what?
Forgive
them. They know not what they do. This takes us back to where we started earlier. When people talk about loving somebody else, if it's an enemy, you will find there, putting this into the three categories that we talked about before, there are some people who say, I will never do anything good for my enemy. Now, maybe if he's hanging off a cliff and I'm the only one who has a rope within 200 miles and it looks like he's going to die within a minute or two, I might tie the rope to a tree and throw it over and he can pull himself up. But generally speaking, people will not do very much if they hate somebody. On the other end, as far as people, I love my enemies and I'm just going to go over and try to win them over with kindness, unless the person is a very religious individual, presumably following the teachings of Christ, you're not going to find that I love my enemies, I pray for my enemies, I want the very best from my enemies, I want them to be friends. Most people are going to come into that middle category again. They have some enemies, and what's their general attitude towards that enemy?
Living knives.
Well, I'm going to put that in the other kind of extreme. But where's the general attitude towards an enemy? I mean, you might have that. But just... Yeah, don't poke the bear in the eye, so to speak. You know, I have this person, I really don't want the best for him, but I'm not going to go out there and agitate him. He's not going to come over there and agitate me. So I'm still not happy for him, and maybe I hope some bad stuff happens to him. But generally, it's just kind of going to stay there in the middle, and we're not going to mess with it very much. You think Jesus knew that most people reason like that? Yes. So if you're going to be that light, if you're going to be like that salt, when it comes to your enemy, do what? Don't try to go out there and get him arrested. Don't just treat him like the world. Matthew 5 verse 44. Pray for him. Bless him. Curse him. Or don't curse him. Or all wait. Do good to him. I've had a long day. I'm sorry. Do good to him. You know, Paul described it this way in Romans chapter 12. Heap coals of what? Fire on his head. Not literally. But you're trying to do good to him, so he's going to feel bad about that and say, I want to be friends with him. You know, he's really not that bad of a guy. Don?
But Jesus didn't pull any punches when the truth was to be spoken. He told the Pharisees exactly what the truth was. So, would you classify that as tough love?
Sometimes, that takes us back to your question about kids. Sometimes you have to say, I've exhausted all my options. I have patiently taught you. I have loved you beyond description. And yet everything that I have tried to do for you has ended up not working. You have frustrated intentionally every single effort, maybe for years, at least perhaps for days or weeks or months, and now I have no other choice. And you see that, I think, with God, don't you? God lets people live, for the most part, many years. Average life expectancy is probably, what, maybe 75 or 80, depending on your gender. And God says, you've had all these years. Maybe you become accountable at the age of 20, and he says, I've let you sin. I've let you live as you want to live for 40, 50, 60, 70 years. And you've had opportunity after opportunity. There was a place where you could worship in spirit and in truth within 5 miles of your house. You drove by it. You knew where it was. The people came. They knocked on your door. They invited you to Bible class. You had a neighbor who worshiped. I gave you all these opportunities, and yet you spurned me. What's the end result? That punishment that you just talked about, and that the Bible says is hell. It is the second death. So God does everything he can to make sure that people do not go down that road, gives us alternative after alternative, and yet the people, for the most part, Jesus said most are going to be lost. And sometimes when we're dealing with individuals, a young person, maybe it's going to be a child in a family relationship, or it's going to be an employee, neighbor, whatever it might be, or in this case, the Pharisees, you're right. There does come that cutoff point. Did you have another thought, or you're thinking about another thought?
Well, if you encounter a person that is advocating false commandments of God, or thinks they're commandments of God, you shouldn't just walk away from that person, should you? Shouldn't you do like Jesus said? You're incorrect. This is why you're incorrect.
God does everything he can to save man. And I would argue that we have that, if we're going to be like God, we'd have that same obligation to do every, to try to exhaust every possible angle, lead, before we finally write somebody off.
If you're in a group and some person is spelling off about something that he claims is God's command or what we should do, and you know it's not right, you shouldn't sit by silently and let that go unchallenged.
Correct. That's not going to help the person. That would be true for them as well, yes. So that gets back to the teaching aspect. You know, we love people, and you're going to have to put yourself out there. You might risk losing a friendship. You might risk being blackballed by the group, or maybe they're going to come egg your house, those kinds of things. But yes, you are right.
What is the opposite of that? It'd be negative from love, so hatred. What if somebody has done something to you or against you that is so hateful? What can you ever do to get even with? There is nothing you can do to get even with that individual. We don't have the power to get even with that individual. Even killing them, who are we going to hurt?
Yeah.
Ourself, their family, our family. There is no way you can get even with somebody else without hurting other people.
That's a great point. Let me just add this. Every once in a while you hear someone, maybe a Christian, maybe not. But a person will say, if you could only understand how deeply they hurt me. If you could only understand how badly they hurt me. No one has ever hurt me to this degree before. No one can ever hurt me to this degree again. I simply can't forgive. Those words trouble me a little bit because you think the Lord was hurt more deeply, more fully than we can ever be hurt in this life?
Sure.
Yes, there's no question about that. And I think everybody who's a Christian would acknowledge that fact. And yet, if he's willing to forgive, then what are we duty-bound to do? Also follow that same path, even though that may be very, very difficult. All right.